I mean, I think we have to look at it in the spirit in which it was said. The reality of it is that we all want a vaccine.
Can there be reasonable explanations for both? Quite possibly, and that's why we need to let the system take its course and the investigations happen.
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along. Mid-September, less than 7 weeks now until the big election day. I'm Jeff Tabiri. Plenty, of course, happening in the world of state politics, and we're going to get caught up on some of the developments this week with a couple of new voices. You're going to hear from Clark Riemer. He is a former chair of the North Carolina Young Republicans. He's also a former three-time chair of the Wake County Young Republicans. These days, he is working over at the state legislature in the office of House Republican Representative Jason Sain. These days, he is working over at the General Assembly in the office of Republican House Representative Jason Sain. And the progressive voice you will hear this week is that of Ayesha Du. She has worked on Charlotte mayoral campaigns and these days is with an organization called Higher Heights. That organization is working to get more Black women elected to government positions. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Glad to be here as well.
We're recording via Zoom early Friday afternoon. Republican U.S. Senator Tom Tillis and Democratic challenger Cal Cunningham met Monday night for the first of three scheduled debates. The pandemic dominated the forum. Other topics included racial inequality, voting by mail, and flip-flopping. Tillis was on more of the attack. Cunningham seemed to be playing more defense. Ayesha, should the challenger have been more aggressive on Monday night?
You know, I think that there's definitely an opportunity to link Tom Tillis more to his record and to his connection to everything that's happened up until now as far as his support of a lot of inaction.
Clark, for you, was there a standout moment for the incumbent during this debate?
You know, I think the biggest thing, you know, Tillis looked well prepared. He looked engaged in the issues, which he is. He's always been a detail and policy oriented guy since he was Speaker of the House in North Carolina. One of the standout things to me is the degree to which we started to see some of the further right Republican base come back to Tillis, which is a political need he had. When you have former Representative John Blust, who is always a Tillis critic, praising his performance on Facebook, I believe, that's a big moment for him and something that he needed to accomplish in these debates.
I thought one of the standout or one of the, you know, the points afterward that was being talked about a lot was this question about a potential vaccine. Cunningham took a lot of heat for that after the fact. Well, he took some heat from Tillis immediately, and then he took some heat about it after the fact. But well, I did see some polling numbers the next day. There was an AARP poll that indicated that only 28% of Democratic voters would feel comfortable with a vaccine were it to come out this year. So, Clark, we'll move to you in just a moment, Ayesha. But, Clark, give me a sense of how you read that vaccine question and that response from Cunningham on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a mistake for Cunningham to question the vaccine, if nothing else, because it clouds the message that Democrats have really pushed on trusting the science, trusting Dr. Fauci, you know, and comparing it to some of the mask questions. You know, you're either trusting the science and the experts or you're not. And now we've muddled the message from the Democratic side. And in that case, I think it was a mistake.
I mean, I think we have to look at it in the spirit in which it was said. The reality of it is that we all want a vaccine. We would all like to be able to move in a space that is safe again. As a person who would be in the highly affected population, living with a mother who was also going to be in the highly affected age group, I want nothing more but a safe vaccine that is definitely proven through science. The reality of it is that given that, unfortunately, so much of this has been clouded by politics, the concern is, at this point, how much politics is actually playing into the work that's being done around this issue. So everyone I know wants a vaccine. Everyone that I know wants for us to be safe. At my father's church, which is a historically Black church, 11 members of the congregation died. So this is not something to play with, and no one is trying to sit send mixed messages, but we do want it to be fully tested and proven by science and not predicted or codified more so by politics.
Aisha, one more follow-up for you on the debate. We heard the name Nancy Pelosi. I was keeping a little tally as I was watching the debate on Monday night. I believe it was 5 times. We heard the name Chuck Schumer 7 times. Of course, both those names, the Senate Minority Leader, the House Majority Leader, the Speaker, not the House Majority Leader, but the Speaker of the House. Those names were uttered time and time again by Senator Tillis. But what wasn't mentioned at any point was the name Donald Trump. Cal Cunningham didn't say Donald Trump at all during this debate. Presumably that was by design. And I'm wondering if you like that maneuver.
I mean, I think it's great to talk about Tom Tillis and his actual alignment with Donald Trump through his actual votes. I mean, at this point, the reality of it is that I'm far less concerned as a born and bred citizen of North Carolina to talk about simply Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer when our current representative has actually worked along with Donald Trump on things that have actually really adversely affected everyone in this entire country. So I would say let's talk about the relationships that are currently in play for the person who's elected.
What did you think of him not mentioning? I mean, is he trying to appeal to independent? But like, what was your read on that?
I thought it was surprising. I don't know if I'd really considered it before now. However, I will say that, you know, I don't think it's surprising that Tillis talked about Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi because they're the Democratic leaders in Congress. And that's who Cal Cunningham will be working with if he is elected. And that will presumably be the leadership he's voting for. So I think that's an important point and something that North Carolinians have to consider when making the choice of who they want to be their senators, who you want to be the leadership of the Congress.
We got a glimpse of what the early days of a Governor Dan Forrest administration could look like. He said he would lift the mask mandate for the state come January if elected. Now, fascinatingly, almost, Governor Cooper's camp used a quote about this as a social media attack as an advertisement against Forrest. And then Forrest's camp lifted the ad and used it as their own kind of promotion of the candidate, underscoring the politicization and the polarization on this mask issue. Clark, polls would suggest that Forrest is in trouble here in this gubernatorial race here in the final less than 7 weeks. Did you view this as more of a legitimate approach to governing, or was this an effort to really try to gain some attention and traction?
I'm not sure it was a planned statement, honestly. I think it may have been an off-the-cuff remark. You know, that was not the greater point of the press conference. The greater point of the press conference was the issue of reopening schools with our superintendent candidate and as well as Pro Tem Berger. And to a degree, it stepped on that message where on the policy issue they actually were designed to talk about, they called for opening schools, and the next day, Governor Cooper backtracks and agrees to open schools and, you know, kind of says they're right on the policy issue. Now, I do believe there's a lot of activism and certainly a degree of people that are mobilized on the mask issue, and I think that Dan has certainly played, is trying to garner their support of people that are more skeptical on these issues.
You know, I will say that I just don't perhaps think it was the most responsible. And I have to say that in that regard, I really do appreciate the fact that Governor Cooper has done his best to work with everyone to hear the concerns that are coming from all of the people of North Carolina. So whether or not everyone agrees on their perspective, I think he's trying to hear them all and to do what's going to help keep people safe.
As for schools, as we think, and to Clark's point, this press conference happens. Forrest makes this comment, whether planned or off the cuff or whatever it was, regardless. A day later, Governor Cooper does announce that elementary schools, districts are going to have the choice to open elementary schools on their own accord, which had not previously been permissible by executive authority. Is that a victory for Forrest and the reopen effort?
You know, I think that it's a complicated issue. I mean, I'm based here in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, and we have a group of parents who are actually suing the school system. And then you have other parents who, can't participate in even getting meals from the meal program because they don't have transportation. I mean, this is it's a really complicated issue. So I'm not looking for victories on behalf of leadership. I'm looking for victories on behalf of the students and the people and the parents who are concerned about the safety of their children. And so I think that this is going to be a moving target and conversation as we look at what's happening with the safety of parents, the safety of children, and the safety of their families, and the safety of teachers. On the news of reopening, we have, after being in school for just 1 week, schools that had to shut down. A friend of mine is actually a principal, and he's quarantining for 14 days because there was a COVID outbreak. We've had teachers who've died. And then when you also look at the numbers of Black and brown students, children, they're the ones who are also dying disproportionately, right? So we want to protect everyone. And I think protecting my family also means protecting your family. I don't think that it's a limited siloed issue. So I don't know that it's a victory, but I think that it's going to be a moving conversation so we can figure out what's going to help to keep children and families and teachers safe.
No, and absolutely our first objective has to be to keep teachers or keep families, children, teachers safe. But part of that is also they have to educate, you know, we have to educate our children and we have to get them back in the classroom. I think at every stage in reopening, our Republican leadership has been, to some degree, pulling Governor Cooper along. We were the last state to open gyms, last or second to last state in the nation to open gyms. We pushed hard for that before the governor agreed to that. We've been slower on schools than other states, and certainly we're still behind in bars and restaurants. Now, we want to be responsible, but it also, the longer we drag this out, the more the harm happens in our economy, and the more students fall behind, because virtual learning is just proving to be very difficult for many, many students, and especially special needs students.
One more topic here. We're going to get caught up on some of what's happening with absentee mail-in ballots. The Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy from Greensboro, it's a multifaceted story. It's really stories here. On Thursday, a federal judge in the state of Washington issued a temporary injunction blocking some of the recent changes that have been implemented to operating procedures at the U.S. Postal Service. So that's one arm of this. I had a couple of colleagues this week, Jason DeBruin and Rusty Jacobs, who looked at some of the donations that had been made by New Breed employees. That, of course, was Louis DeJoy's company when he was in Greensboro, to legislative candidates, to gubernatorial candidates. And one of their findings was that Pat McCrory received $96,000 from donors who listed New Breed as their employer. 4 years later, that company was effectively XPO Logistics, and it went from $96,000 down to $35,000. This is a complicated story, and what I'm, I guess, wanting to lean on each of you on here a little bit as party insiders, and I hope that doesn't come across as a pejorative, but as party insiders, as we learn more about this Louis DeJoy story, I'm wondering if you're moved more toward thinking that a legal line has been crossed, potentially, or if this is similar, if this is just kind of a practice that you've seen, in fundraising efforts, perhaps in other ways or other places. Clark, let's start with you.
Well, clearly, you know, the initial accusation that came out of asking for a donation and then agreeing to pay it back as a bonus or in some other manner is blatantly illegal under federal law. So if that was done, you know, the investigation needs to happen and we'll see where that goes. I think it's too early to tell, especially in a time when Mr. DeJoy's been kind of headlined and embroiled in controversy. The mere accusation may not be, you know, it's something we want to investigate and just not take on its face value. You know, you look at other things that came out, like ActBlue, in the last week, ActBlue, the Democratic fundraising behemoth of small dollar donations. A study came out, 47% of their donations in 2019 were from unemployed individuals when you run the data, of some $350 million. That, you know, at first glance raises alarm bells. Can there be reasonable explanations for both? quite possibly, and that's why we need to let the system take its course and the investigations happen.
You know, essentially, innocent until proven guilty. So let's go ahead and say that. However, at the same time, if it turns out to be true, then you're right. It's going to be an absolute violation of campaign finance law. So I think that this just hits on, yet again, continuing to tighten campaign finance laws and what this looks like overall. It's been a goal to tighten campaign finance for quite some time. What I will also add is that I think that the challenge that we're dealing with right now is that he's also in a really critical position for this election. And so I think it just raises the question, how do we handle this in this moment? Because an investigation will not take place before the election. It will not take place before we start early voting all over. Ballots are already out for vote by mail, which would fall under his purview as far as being able to move the mail. So we want to guarantee people a fair and free process, a fair and free election, and to let them know that their votes will be counted. We want to be sure that there's not going to be any kind of election fraud. At this point, we haven't had voter fraud, right? We've actually had election fraud where people somehow maneuvered the system in a way that they weren't supposed to, and really arguably could have lost the trust of voters. So the biggest thing right now is for the people, the voters, to feel confident with the process and for us to be able to feel confident that we're going to have a fair and free election.
Business executives, CEOs, and I'm not talking about necessarily quid pro quo or kicking it back with a bonus, but business executives or CEOs leaning on employees, strongly encouraging employees, pressuring employees to make political donations. Is that something that you have seen or heard of frequently, never, sometimes, always? Give me just a quick classification if you've ever seen that in your political experience.
I think you hear of CEOs asking for donations among their top executives. Obviously, you know, businesses are going to have certain interests, and it's pretty rational for the CEO to say, hey, this is this is what the company's doing, and this is how it falls into the political landscape. My wife works at SAS, and that before, I believe the 2000, must have been 2012 election, you know, Dr. Goodnight had a statement that what happens in the election is very important to the company. Now, that wasn't a donation request, but it was something that he thought it needed to be considered by his employees in his job as the owner and CEO of the company.
So I would say that it's something that we've seen. I don't know if I fully agree with the culture. I agree with the culture of companies allowing for people to participate in the election, for giving them time off to participate in the process so that we can truly support our democracy and the democratic process. So I think that is a really good space for companies to play. I think when we get into asking for money, that changes things. And I think that, of course, if the company is then promising some type of promotion or some type of payback, that's where it gets into being illegal. So I think that it happens more than we would like to think it happens, as far as people actually pressing for donations, as far as companies pressing perhaps their top staffers to participate in donations. But I really hope that we're not in a space where they're breaking the law and promising people something.
Clark Riemer is a General Assembly staff member. He's been involved in Young Republican efforts as well. Aisha Dew works with Higher Heights, an organization trying to get more black women elected to public office. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Forty-six days until November 3rd. Now less than 1 month until early voting starts. Don't forget that you can learn a lot more about state politics, what is happening in different races with different issues on the pandemic front, and how so much of it is intertwined and tied together. For a great resource, just head over to our website. It's WUNC.org. And don't forget to listen to the great program, Tested. It's a twice-weekly podcast that WUNC is producing. It's about both the pandemic and also racial inequality. State of things, middays, noon to one, get you caught up on so much of what is playing out across North Carolina as well. For Aisha and Clark, my name is Jeff. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you. Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Can you say Joe Biden?
Joe Biden.
Say election 2020.
Election 2020.